Sikkim Sports presents the Sikkim Sportscast, a look at all things Baylor from recruiting to football, basketball, as well as news concerning the Big 12. Your hosts are publisher Kevin Lundquist and managing editor Jake Shaw. Our MC is Stephen Cook. Now it's time to talk Baylor, and here's Stephen Cook.
Hi, this is Steve Cook, and welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. We are here with Jake Shaw.
Hey, Stephen, how you doing?
I'm doing great, and Kevin Lundquist. Kevin, how's it going with you?
I'm doing good, Stephen. Jake, good to catch up again this week.
Yeah, happy to do it again, and obviously we've got a lot to talk about, which I think that'll be the case for the next 14, 15 weeks, or actually longer than that.
Yep.
Through the summer, so let's get going.
All right, let's jump in. Khalil Houghton said he is going to tweet his selection for which school he's going to on August 8th. Now, we're going to be broadcasting this on August 7th, so we'll be doing an update after that. But right now, Kevin, can you give us a little background on his, on what the recruiting story's been with him?
Well, you know, Stephen, it's a case where he's looking at four, really five schools. It's Baylor, Oklahoma, Texas Tech, Arkansas, and Duke. The Duke part of this was a little bit of a, I don't know if you want to call it a late addition, but something that he had always considered, but because he did not get a chance to get out there during the summer and visit them, I think a lot of people were of the opinion that it was just those four, but it's really five. Although I do think the leaders in this are going to be between Baylor and Oklahoma. I still would favor Baylor as the leader in this, although it's kind of funny because when you talk to, or at least when I've talked to, you know, certain people from who may have Tech connections, Oklahoma connections, their people are telling them or their sources are telling them they feel really good or they really like Tech's chances or Oklahoma's chances. I think in other words, what that means is that nobody really knows. And Khalil's done a really excellent job of keeping this thing under wraps. As of Tuesday when I talked to him briefly, he had not finalized his decision yet. So he doesn't have a lot of time if he's going to be 100% on this. We'll just see where this goes on Friday. I still like Baylor's chances, although I do think that it would be not totally shocking if he left Waco.
Yeah, I agree, Kevin. It wouldn't be shocking. He wouldn't be the first, and it won't be the last. It's funny, I was actually, while you were talking, looking through my files, trying to remember the first time I actually spoke to or about Houghton, and it was 13 months ago, almost to this very day, before his junior year, and I talked to his coach, and at that time, I don't think Baylor had offered him. I think at that point, maybe only Devontre Strickland, his teammate at Waco Midway, had been offered, and the coach just raved about Houghton. He said, well, this guy's going to blow up, and you know, here we are a year later, and he's got major options. Baylor hadn't offered at the time, but they were pretty high on him then, and you know, they've been in it from the start. I think what works in his favor is seeing a guy like Ahmad Dixon, who played basically his position at the same high school and is now going through a Cowboys training camp. You know, it's just a good success story of a local kid playing it in the hometown team and having great success both as an individual and as a team. Houghton's coming into a situation that will be 10 times better than what Dixon stepped into, and I'm sure the coaches are preaching that. You know, when Dixon came, it was a pretty big stunner. Baylor was just at the very roots of where the program is now. So, you know, you've talked about it on our site, Kevin, so many times, just how many times he's been over to the field house, if you will, to talk to the coaches, how many times he's been to practice. Baylor's done everything they can with this guy. If he doesn't pick Baylor, to me it's because it comes down to one thing. He doesn't want to be in Waco for the next 4 years. But that would be the reason to me, because every sense we get is that he just truly loves Baylor and the coaches. So.
Yeah, and he's expected to go over to Thursday's practice as well. He was going to try and get over to practice on Tuesday when they opened up fall camp and couldn't get over there. But he said for at least his words, that he was for sure to try and get over there on Thursday to watch him go through that workout. And you know, he was over there last week. He was over there just about every single week during the summer he's been over there. So he knows the lay of the land, what the expectations are, the fact that the coaching staff is really leaning on him about the hometown legacy, what it would mean, and to parlay on what you're saying about the Ahmad Dixon factor, how well he succeeded at Baylor. But again, I just do not know at this point, or I guess the better way is to say this, I don't have a read for how much leaving Waco means to him.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing that I can think about this with the only thing I can compare this to is when Will Hines from Wake, Ohio was going through this a couple of years ago, and Will had gone over to Baylor on several occasions. The coaches really were all over him at one point. At one point, he considered Baylor his leader, and then he winds up going to Arkansas. And his reason going out, he wanted to get out of the state of Texas, and he wanted to go play somewhere else. I can't begrudge a kid if that's what his heart really tells him what he wants to do, and he can do it without looking back, then that's fine. And with Khalil, I think that, to me, in these last hours of his decision, I think that's what he's probably trying to wrestle with is, will I get the same amount of satisfaction in my college playing career if in Waco or out of Waco? And I think that's really what it comes down to for him. And again, I still think it's between really your two finalists are Baylor and OU.
I have a feeling that his decision's been made, that it's not something he's wrestling over with, you know, today or, you know, overnight Thursday and into Friday. And the reason I say that is, you know, we thought his recruitment might go on for a little while, and the fact that he's doing it before his senior season really makes me think he's made up his mind.
Perhaps.
And as we're recording this, Kevin, as we're releasing this podcast on Thursday, there's a chance he'll be at practice, and I think that'll be a statement right there. If he's at practice, a good statement for Baylor. I don't think it's going to be a tell, but no. I think it'll be a statement that Baylor is, you know, the team to beat. Because if he shows up, man, that's gotta be tough to show up to practice Thursday and then, you know, put on an OU hat or tweet OU the next day. It's been done many times before, but I don't know. I take it as a really good sign if he's there Thursday.
You know, actions do speak louder than words, Jake. It's true. He's got the convenience of running over to that campus. I mean, when he was up in Norman back in June, he ran, I think that was during when Baylor was doing its open camp series. I think he was when the coaches were out in East Texas in Marshall, he was up in Norman. And the next day they come back to Waco for that Sunday camp there, June 8th, and he comes strolling onto the campus after he finished going to visit OU. So, I mean, I really think I would agree with you that I do think Baylor is the team to beat here. But again, the part of me just says, what is it about him looking at, and maybe I'm getting paralysis by analysis on this, because I've been every step of the way on this thing with him. At least I'd like to think I have. I'm not going to pretend that I'm going to get inside his head, because that's, first of all, not fair of me. But I also think, too, that I do know that he's taken a lot of his time. He's the kind of kid that's got an idea that he's weighed everything, pros and cons, with every school. And you might be right that he's already made his decision. He's just not telling everyone that he's made that decision and kind of being a little bit political in terms of saying, well, I'm not 100% there or something like that. But I think, you know, the only thing that when he and I were just talking about certain things, I just said, you know, just make sure that this is what you really want, whatever it is you decide. And I hope for his sake that, number one, when he makes that choice, that he's happy with it, and that he moves, and that he goes full throttle to whichever school he picks. I hope for Baylor's sake that he's going to be donning the green and gold, but I guess we're all going to find out on Friday.
Yeah, and you know, you and I have talked before the podcast, during the week, actually for a while. I mean, he's been a topic of conversation for a while, but I want to bring up your gut feeling, because You've told me what your gut feeling is, and I'd like for you to spell it out, because I feel like if any recruiting reporter, you've probably been in contact with him as much, if not more, than anyone. So,
you know, I'm very, I guess if I can use the word fearful for Baylor, I'm really thinking that he might pull OU on this. I have nothing to base that on. I do think the one weird thing, though, that happened this week in the category of things that make you go, was when Jameel Johnson from South Oak Cliff decommitted from Oklahoma on Tuesday. Apparently that was something that was expected, that a lot of people thought was going to happen. I don't know if you can say one thing is related to the other. There's two different ways for me to look at this. One, from my analytical hat, I think he's going to pick Baylor. My gut says I think he's going OU. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that's just whatever you were dealing with earlier this week, Jake. That's there's too much there that says that he's going to Baylor, but there's just that part of me that says because I think I just keep hearkening back to what Will Hines did, like I just talked about, that really has me thinking this. I really hope this doesn't happen for Baylor. They've worked their tails off to make this work for them. They've told them he's their number one priority. He's shared that with me. I think just about every service that's talked to him has said that. He's blessed to be in this position. A lot of us would love to be in that position. I really hope that it goes Baylor's way because it would really be a great cool for their. He's not a Rivals 250 guy, but he's such a talented player that's got three Big 12 teams, an ACC team, and an SEC team after him. It counts for something.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I think guys are definitely underrated sometimes, and for whatever reason, I believe he is. He comes from some athletic bloodlines. I believe his parents both track athletes. So,
right.
He's athletic and he's a football player. I think he is underrated. So, you know, the coaches obviously don't care about that. You know, one recruitment I'm maybe seeing a small parallel to is Andrew Billings. You know, of course, his recruitment dragged on
right
up until signing day. But I think people's gut feeling then was that he wouldn't pick Baylor. And I think the analytics said he also wouldn't pick Baylor, and he did. And I use that as an example to say, is what you like to say, recruiting is weird. It's just it's hard to predict. I look at it like two even teams going against each other. You know, everybody try to do their predictions, but at the end of the day, it's something else is going to settle.
That's weird too, Jake, because I said back at the times, just if we're going to go back in time for a second with Billings, when I was putting that hot board together for our site back then, I said then I thought Andrew was picking Baylor. And the Texas people and the TCU guys are for our respective colleagues said, why? And I said, I don't know.
I can tell you why. I went down there when he made the announcement. Mm-hmm. Billings wanted to stay here with his family.
Mm-hmm.
His dad was there. And, you know, sometimes parents get kind of a bad rap. Billings' old man was there. He was there supporting him. Talking with him and everything like that. I wanted to get a photo of him together with the Baylor poster in the background, and his dad said, no, this is Andrew's moment.
Mm-hmm.
And put him in there. Now, Houghton, one of the things, you're saying you can't get a read on it, Jake, you're saying you can't get a read on it. The people from Tech, the people from Oklahoma all think they've got a strong chance. Houghton has played this very close to the vest.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a lot more media savvy than a lot of the guys that we deal with. When I went over to Midway to interview him, I look at him out in the hallway. He's pulling on a Baylor pullover. And then he comes out and does the interview, and then he comes back out and takes the Baylor pullover off. I think he's one of those guys that whenever you talk to him, he's not going to close the door until he absolutely has to close it. I think the things Baylor has going for them, they've got a heck of a pipeline in Midway.
That's great, yeah.
The coaches know him. The coaches know each other, and I think he's got that. I think what it comes down to is, like you said, Kevin, does he want to stay in Waco? Now, I think another thing we haven't mentioned is whenever I've interviewed him and when I've listened to your interviews, Kevin, Khalil seems to really care about his education. And I think what kind of education he will be able to get at a school will make a difference, which should be pretty good for Baylor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, yeah, that's and that's where he kind of pushed. That's where the Duke angle comes into this too. So,
Well, the good thing is, you know, 24 hours after this podcast comes out, we'll all know his destination, and like you said at the top, Stephen, we'll add a little bonus podcast to this, and we'll talk about, you know, what Houghton picked and why he picked it and how it affects Baylor going forward, whether he picks him or not. So, you know, look for that after his decision. We'll have that little extra.
Okay, make a prediction.
Prediction? I'm gonna say Baylor, from the standpoint of just the familiarity, and I think his relationships with the Baylor coaches are probably stronger than any other school, and I've said all along that relationships mean more than stadiums and uniforms and guaranteed playing time. You know, that's to me the biggest part of recruiting, so I'll go with Baylor.
Kevin?
I guess, I don't know, remember how I kind of politicized my answer there just a few moments ago?
Where
I
said Oklahoma. You said Oklahoma. Just
right. Instinctively, it was, I think, OU. I just think he wants to leave. But again, I'm going to say this with absolute certainty of saying I really hope I'm wrong on this. I was right on Andrew Billings, but this is one point where I really hope I'm wrong here. And again, all of the actions speak to him going to Baylor. But like I said, the words to live by and how I've been doing this for all these years is recruiting is weird, and I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Steven, your prediction?
My gut feeling is not Baylor. Okay.
No. Stephen, sorry, go ahead.
Okay. I think Oklahoma 1, I think Duke 2. Okay, and the reason for me is that it's kind of like it feels kind of like he's a guy that keeps putting off the wedding, and if he was going to commit, why hadn't he committed yet? You know, because you know, like I said, he could give tours over at Baylor right now as many times as he's been over there, and you know and then he said he was going to decide in July, and he says I keep thinking that there's a little bit of, I think he initially wanted to go to Baylor, but I think he's got cold feet on there.
You know, that's you're one of our more optimistic members of the Sikkim Sports community, so. You know, I don't, that kind of, I'm surprised, Stephen. I thought you'd pick Baylor, but you've been around him too, so you've got an educated guess. It's not just a gut feeling there, so.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SikkimSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
The guy that I'm really excited about, and you guys know this, is Javonte. You know, Javonte is here because he wants to be here. He has had a great summer, and it's just it's a tribute to Art and just the way he deals with these kids. Because, you know, a lot of people say, well, we knew. You know, Javonte, every player we have at some point or another has some issues. And he's gotten back on track. He's never wavered from wanting to be here, so we're excited to have him.
And that was Baylor defensive coordinator Phil Bennett talking about Javonte McGee. He said he's excited about him, said he wants to be here. Jake, your reaction?
I think it's probably music to Baylor fans' ears to hear that, because you're going to be a little bit skeptical about a guy who you know, went through his freshman season, looked like he's going to be a big-time contributor, and then just bails. Kevin, you remember, there were times when nobody could get a hold of him. We'd call his former head football coach in high school. We couldn't get a hold of him. We used our contacts with Baylor. They weren't getting a hold of him. You know, there was a tenuous moment where you thought, we might never hear from this guy again. Right. So that's a total 180 to where we are right now, where Bennett's praising the guy for his work ethic and for his just what, you know, how much he wants to be here. Again, it's music to Baylor fans' ears, and it makes you believe that he's going to be here for the long haul, and that he's going to live up to his, you know, his huge billing.
Yeah, I think Jake and Steven, you know, the background that Javonte came from down in San Antonio is a really hard life, and he was really worried about his mother and just a lot of personal things going on there. And I think he just really questioned a lot about why is he there and things of that nature. And, you know, I can understand where he was coming from at the point of why he left, because he just wasn't settled into doing anything. And now that he's back and the coaches have expressed how excited they are to have him, how excited he is to be back, when you've got a player of that kind of talent like Javonte and he's mentally ready to participate and be an active member of your defense, and as Art Briles has said, he can be such an X factor because he can play him inside and out, that I think it just really – he could really be one of the five – most important players in the 2014 season, because he's just that gifted. I can remember the day that he committed to Baylor in January of, what was it, 2012. And that the whole place, you know, equally as much as Billings, maybe a little bit more subdued than Billings because it didn't have the national flow to it. It just kind of got out there crept out there, but the same kind of reaction. His talent is just so enormous. He's got a gift to play a game, and he's really good at it. And he can do something with his life because of this gift, because he's seen other friends that he's known who have suffered horrible fates in their lives. I think now that he's really appreciating this opportunity, taking advantage of it, enjoying every day. And it's like every day is a new day for him. And I think if that's really what it is for him, and he's got a new lease on life, and he feels good about the way where things are going with his family, in particular his mother back home in San Antonio, I think that really that kind of peace of mind can do wonders for someone. Because a lot of these kids are so tied into their moms that if mom is okay, then they're okay. If mom is not doing well, then it's not going well for them either. And coaches have to deal with that too.
I think one of the other things you were dealing with Javonte, and it seemed that Javonte came from the kid did not grow up with a whole lot of money.
Yeah.
He grew up rich. And when you walk onto the Baylor campus, that is like walking into a different world for somebody who grew up really poor. Baylor is an opulent campus. It's just a whole different world. And I think that he had a little bit of culture shock when he got on campus, and I think that he started worrying about his mom. I think you run into a little bit of guilt thing, you know, when if you go out and you're doing great, and then, you know, you look back and you see your family and they're struggling, and I think he felt like he wanted to go back and help. And I think one of the things that's different is, it's something we'll maybe talk about in a later segment, is this wasn't a thing where he wasn't with the team because, you know, he was out running drugs or he was out, you know, getting in trouble. He was back trying to look after his family. And so I think that makes a huge difference. And, you know, when during one of the interviews when somebody asked him about McGee, Ryle said, hey, we'll be fine. I'm thinking about what Giovanni's going to be in 15, 20 years. He's got an opportunity here, and I want to see him use that opportunity. I thought that was huge.
That's a great point, Kevin. Steven, about just the culture shock. I also think part of the shock was, you know, he went from I think he was at a 3A school in San Antonio, where he was the biggest guy, in, you know, within a 50 miles radius. You know, he shows up to Baylor, and he's not just the biggest thing, and he's having to work pretty hard, probably a lot harder than he did in high school. And you know, I think that, you know, when you're at a place you don't feel comfortable, and little things start getting to you, and maybe the hard work was tough on him too. And you know, we've talked about the fruits of a Big 12 title. He said it himself. He sat on his couch watching Baylor win games last fall and winning a Big 12 championship, and it really made him understand, you know, what he was about to give up. So I think, you know, Baylor's incredible season is part of the reason he's back. It just made him realize the opportunity he had in front of him, and not many kids in his position get that kind of opportunity.
Yeah, the other thing about Javonte is that Coach Bennett had talked about flexing him outside, and we've been hearing that a little bit. Was taking a look at the post-spring depth chart, and they're a lot deeper at tackle than they are at defensive end. And so I could see McGee flexing outside a lot more than we might suspect. And other than Oakman, he would be their biggest defensive end. So say if you want to put your beef up front, you know, if you stick Oakman, Billings, Blackshear, and have McGee in there, you got a Goliath line is Oakman.
That's a run-stopping defensive line that has the ability to rush the pass, too. That's a great point if you want to beef it up. And I also think, you know, now we find out today or on Tuesday, I believe, the departure, we don't know if it's temporary or full-time, of Sam Ukwuchu, which, Kevin, I'm famous now for butchering last names. You might have to...
I'm not going to help you on that one.
I'm calling him Sam.
Well, you know, people, the backstory real quick, he's from the Houston area, went up to Boise State, redshirted his redshirt freshman year, was a freshman All-American, transferred to Baylor, redshirted at Baylor last year, and after the spring was a second-string defensive end, a guy who can really get to the passer. And camp opened up on Tuesday, and his name wasn't on the roster, and the coaches confirmed that he's left the team for personal reasons. They didn't give any kind of indication about when he'll be back. So, you know, now you have a defensive end out of your rotation. This is a defensive line that the coach has been touting for a while. So you lose a guy, and that just makes more sense for maybe McGee to get on the outside because you've lost the guy there. And
yeah.
Would you rather have McGee sitting on the bench backing up a tackler or getting on the field at defensive end if there's a chance? So I think that it makes even more sense that he'll be rotated to the outside some.
You know, and if they did that, if they kept him on the outside, McGee, you know, they did it last year with Byron Bonds, that they took the red shirt off and they put him in, I think, what was his first game, West Virginia, if memory serves. But, you know, what are the chances that they do that with potentially Andrew Morris? What's the chance that they potentially do that with Josh Malin, who are coming in from the 14 class? If they're physically ready, I mean, you know, those guys got there in June, have gone through two summer sessions, two and a half months, with Kaz Kazadi in the strength and conditioning program. That's obviously not an extended period of time, but enough to know what the expectations are. But, you know, if one of those guys comes in and develops and so forth, and that's the one thing, too, is that this roster is so heavy with defensive tackles that if they decided to put Morris, Andrew Morris, into this rotation for whatever reason, then that would be, and despite the fact whatever happens with Sam Hughes, end game here, whether he returns or not. You know, if you put Javonte on the outside, you could probably live with that for the balance of the season because, number one, that's his natural position. Number two, you've got so many defensive tackle choices and enough guys who have experience back there. Don't forget Suleiman Masumbuko, who's in that mix too. You've got a lot of choices there. The depth with this defensive line is just crazy.
It is.
How many guys they've got there. And again, that's part of the reason why guys – despite of what people think of OU, that's part of the reason why I thought that Baylor can – why I think Baylor can win the Big 12 is because this is as good as this defensive line has ever looked, number one, under Art Briles, and probably in Baylor's history, maybe if you want to go back to the Santana-Dotson time.
Yeah, that would give it a run for its money for sure. You know, to me, one of the true signs of how deep this defensive line is that Trevor Clemens Valdez was I think he was an opening day starter last year.
Right.
He's not even on the two deep right now. He's an upperclassman with starting experience, and he's kind of been passed over by some younger guys. So it just shows how deep this is that a guy who was an opening day starter now is really fighting to get some playing time.
And to piggyback on your point, Jake, and this even though this is unrelated from a different position, I saw a quote that one of our posters put on the thread from the Big 12 Skywriters from Troy Baker, and he says, if I was being recruited by Baylor now, I wouldn't be recruited. I'm paraphrasing that. He goes, but I would not be being recruited by Baylor at this point.
That
quote right there really jumped out at me because that tells you, one, guys aren't dummies. They can see how talented this roster is. And so for the guys who were the parts of the 11, 12 classes or whatever, and now they're seeing the 13s and the 14s come in and what's on the horizon and the 15s, I think it kind of tells you where the whole thing is now and where this roster has completely evolved from building to now we're a point where it is, you can argue it's sustaining.
Well, one of the things about Troy, remember, he tends to get kind of down on himself.
Troy Baker.
We'll have the interview up probably by the time the podcast is up, but when I interviewed him earlier this week, I asked him to self-grade from last year, and he was like, oh, man, he was just not well at all, not well at all.
Right.
He wasn't all the way back, but he wasn't that bad.
Well, he hardly played.
Yeah. But he is kind of down on himself, but I think he may not be giving himself a high enough grade. When Baker gets that confidence back in his knee, I think he's going to be a pretty good tackle.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was a pretty good tackle, so I think he'll be a good one again, too. Kevin, you mentioned Andrew Morris and Josh Mayle and his potential 2014 signees with a chance to play early. Would you say I'd rank them closer to the middle of the pack or maybe toward the bottom of 2014 guys who are going to play? The obvious ones are Katie Cannon and Davion Hall, who's apparently looking good in camp. I mean, who would you say, just from a position standpoint, need standpoint, or even talent standpoint, who's your top, I don't know, two or three guesses of guys who will burn their shirts?
You know, I think if we're going to leave Hall and Cannon out of the conversation, I think there's a chance that you could probably see Jordan Blake, the kid from Princeton, the athlete who they're going to put in the secondary at safety. They've been working him out there, even though we're in shirts and helmets right now. But I think you could see him be a part of this. I know that Chance Waz and Verkedrick Vaughns are getting some looks there. Those would be, I mean, it'd be really risky to put those two guys into putting true freshman defensive backs into a Division I secondary, especially for a program that's looking to contend for a Big 12 championship and be in the national championship conversation. But I would say I'd put my money on Jordan behind Hall and Cannon.
You know, that's a guy who I kind of overlooked, but I think you're right. I think he's got a decent chance, especially with Chris Sanders, the JUCO transfer, still struggling with an injury. Mm-hmm. You know, he was listed as a co-starter, but if he's not practicing, that just opens the door for someone else. And obviously the coaches can't just assume that he's going to be back. They got to have a backup plan. And Blake, I didn't quite realize, when it was all said and done, he had the third highest Rivals rating of any recruit signed by Baylor in the 2014 class. Mm-hmm. You know, Katie Cannon was a 6.0 four-star. Davion Hall was a 5.9 four-star. And Jordan Blake was a 3.7 three-star. That might not mean a whole lot to people, but basically within each star ranking, there are also rankings within those. So, he was graded out as the third best recruit in this class, and cornerback such a wide open position right now that he does make sense. But I don't see more than three or four guys getting their shirts burned. You know, Art Briles doesn't just like to throw a ton of freshmen out. He uses them if he needs them.
Yeah. Well, there is a surprise factor in there, you know, because like nobody knew Bonds was going to burn his shirt.
Nobody
tweeted it. But the other thing, if you look at the true freshman that busted the depth chart, you had Terrence Williams at running back. You had Jordan Furbacher at tight end. You had KD, and then you had Davion Hall. I think Terrence Williams has a chance just because running back is such an injury-prone position.
Right.
Very hard for a running back to get through a season without having at least a twisted ankle or something like that. And they got Williams sitting at number four. So I could see that getting burned.
You know, I want to piggyback on what you said about that, Stephen, because I had a conversation with somebody today exactly about Terrence. Remember, he was a mid-semester arrival. He came in January, so he went through spring camp with Baylor, so he has that going for him. Yeah, I think as it stands right now, you've got Shaq Linwood and Devin Chafin as your top two running backs. Of course, you got Johnny Jefferson, who's pretty good who's pretty well locked down the third running back spot. And then I think with Terrence, you know, I think he's the kind of guy that they won't necessarily, the staff I'm referring to, won't necessarily label him and mm-hmm. tell him, we're going to redshirt you this year. We're just going to, I think what they're going to do is they're just going to not play him if they can, if they don't have to. And then all of a sudden, if, like you're saying, because of the brutality of the game and how running backs get beat up and that sort of thing, if there is a situation like what happened in the Tech game last year where both Linwood and Chafin are your starting running backs, we're in a situation where they've got to have a hammer running back who's got to get you third and two, and Devin Chafin's nursing a tweaked knee or something, who are you going to go to? Well, you're going to go to Terrence. And the beautiful thing about playing running back, although it is a very punishing position to play, it is the one sport, it is the one position in any level of football that you can transition from one level to the next, because see the hole, hit it. Obviously, you've got to learn to pick up your pass blocking parts of that game. I get all that. But at the same time, it's the one that you can transition to the easiest. And I think unless they can get through the season with minor bumps and bruises, you know, nicks here and there, I think they would prefer to redshirt Terrence, but they probably won't go out there and say that because of the way the season could unfold. And they might
need. Yeah, and I think they'd like to redshirt him, and I think we're kind of getting last year's season is kind of controlling what we're thinking about this, because the year before, Cease Drunk and Glasgow Martin made it completely healthy through, you know, and Baylor didn't have injuries, so I think last year was just kind of freaky that your two best running backs both missed extended periods of time, so obviously you never know what's going to happen, but you can't count on Shaq Linwood and Devin Chafin both being out for two or three games apiece. So, Stephen, though, you did mention another guy, Jordan Fehrbacher, the tight end, like Williams, he came to Baylor in January. So mm-hmm. he's another guy who'd be a good candidate to play, especially since, Trevon Armstead looks like he's got tight end position down, but still somewhat of an unknown. And Gus Penning last year, the JUCO transfer, was injured and hardly made a contribution. So there is a chance for playing time at tight end, and I think he's going to see the field whether he's needed or not, just because I think they want to groom him to be a guy as part of their future. And with this non-conference schedule where you're going to have some blowouts, I bet Fehrbacher gets a lot of time in the second half of some games.
Yeah, I think that's possible. One of the things about Trevon is that he has got, like, really good size. Okay, you know, because he's sitting there, he's like 6'6", 270. So he can block down or he can go up for a jump ball.
And, yeah.
He's got pretty good hands. So I think he's obviously their choice. But, you know, the tight end position with Baylor is kind of like, a really good butler. You know, it's like the key to being a really good butler is that nobody notices you're there. And that's kind of the key to being a good tight end at Baylor, is you just quietly carry out all your assignments.
Yeah, there's no glory in that position.
Fehrbacher gets in, we might not even notice.
Well, the thing about Armstead, I know we're kind of going off the beaten path here, but golly, he might be the most athletic guy they've ever had play tight end under Art in his time here at Baylor. And, you know, that spring game, I go back to just, you know, his ability to catch the ball, run routes, and even in his blocking schemes, that still just really kind of stood out to me. And I'm like going, you know, I just wonder, you know, if Bryce trusts Trevon, he could be a factor in this offense. You know, to what extent, we really don't know, just because we've never seen Baylor throw to tight ends.
No, that's Kevin, if he gets 20 or more catches this season, you know, your next five rounds of whatever drink you like are on me. Baylor just, they don't throw the tight end, and it used to really bother me. And then, you know, you're scoring 55 points a game and passing for however many yards a game. Does it even matter? You know, the system works. So I used to basically lobby for the tight ends to get more catches. But, you know, things, the offense doesn't really need it to work. Now, I think maybe it could catch some teams off guard, and it has in the past. You know, I know Jordan Iver, when he made receptions, it was usually catching a team off guard, not looking for something up the middle. But, no, I've basically given up on the tight end becoming a real prolific part of the offense, at least from a receiving standpoint.
Well, one of the things that, you know, Kevin mentioned, and Jake, I think Kevin may be onto something with this, because when I've watched Armstead out there, when he blocks, he looks like a lineman. When he catches, he looks like a receiver. There's not just a whole lot of tight ends that can do that, and I think he could be an X factor. But like you say, if you've got guys stretching the field, if Baylor's popping, you know, 500-600 yards passing on offense, there's not much chance that a tight end's going to get anything.
Yeah, and I mean, you said it there, stretching the defense. I mean, Brile's whole philosophy is speed and getting speed into space. You know, Armstead's not necessarily part of that formula. So I'd love to see him become an X factor, because I think he is a physical freak. And something I wrote about on Sikkim Sports on Wednesday is he's dropped 15 pounds, so he's kind of shed that lineman weight. And so I imagine he's even quicker and faster than he used to be. And he's huge. He's got an NFL body already. So he could be I'd love to see him incorporated into the passing game more. But I think it's more important that he becomes the dependable blocker that Jordan Iver and Jared Monk were these last couple of years. Because you mentioned it. They don't get glory. They were unsung. But they were huge with pass protection. And oftentimes, you know, it's five linemen and the tight end as that sixth lineman. And that's more important that Armstead picks that up.
Okay, so my best guess is Terrence Williams sees the field at running back. I would not be surprised to see KD Cannon coming in. Now, he didn't list on the post-spring depth chart, but all the guys that did were guys that enrolled in January.
He wasn't there.
Yeah. But right now, Baylor has so many riches at receiver. If those freshmen see a lot of the field, there's been some pretty serious injuries.
You know, I somewhat disagree, because I think they were pretty deep last year, and Rhodes was a factor early. Robbie Rhodes, who of course is no longer a Baylor Bear, but you know, he was a factor early on, and the only thing that kept him off the field was the injury. So, and this you're right, the unit is deep, but you know, losing Rhodes hurts, and I feel like the outside Jay Lee is still not totally proven. There's a chance someone could outplay him. I love the two inside receivers, and I love Antoine Goodley also on the outside, but I think there's room, and we'll say it over and over, there's going to be so many blowouts that in the third quarter, these guys' starters are going to have to come out, and Baylor, while they're great, the backups right now are redshirt freshmen, so they're going to play. I think Cannon gets on the field. I think he gets 20 to 25 catches this year. Hall, maybe the same thing, just partly as a product of who Baylor is destroying, and partly as a product because they're so good.
And there could be the fact that Bryles just has enough confidence in recruiting wide receivers that he feels like he'll have some more coming in, even if these guys don't burn a red shirt don't get a red shirt.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he probably hasn't spoken about many recruits like he's spoken about Cannon. Robbie Rhodes may be the only other one. So he definitely has high aspirations for KD Cannon.
Okay, in the contested positions, left guard on offense, who do y'all see? I think it's McGowan and Muir.
Yeah, right? Blake Muir, the Hawaii transfer, and Laquan. Kevin made a great point today, and Kevin, I can't believe I think I've told you you've made two or three great points.
I know. Don't ever let that happen again, Jake.
That's your
I've already burned up my 2014.
Yeah, that's your allotment.
And so,
good ideas, or at least you're on pace to crush 2013. Your point was that starter in this case might be meaningless. I think they could rotate in and out. I mean, I think if they're gonna come out on a drive with the intention to shove it down your throat with the running game, I think McGowan's out there. I think if maybe they see that they can pick apart a defense by passing it, maybe Blake Neer comes in because he's obviously much smaller and more of a pass blocker. So I think both of them are going to play a lot, and it's probably a good situation to have. You have a 400-pound human, and then you have a guy who started 12 games at left tackle for Hawaii, so a guy who's experienced and mature. So, you know, I don't think anyone necessarily is going to win that job. I think they're both going to play a lot.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, the more I thought about this, and the more I was talking to more people about this, you know how reporters always kind of like to talk and theorize with each other and kind of quote each other's theories and their stories as saying sources close to the situation. but seriously, I do think that the more that you look at this situation, and there's a reason why both Muir and Laquan are listed as quote-unquote co-starters. They're both bolded at that position. And they may not change. Now, you may have, in the opener against SMU, you may have Laquan playing the first series. Is he going to play all the series all the way through the fourth quarter? I guess it kind of depends on how he holds up during camp.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously the scrimmages. But I just, from a stamina standpoint, durability standpoint, things that they want to do on offense in particular plays, that the staff, and in particular maybe Randy Clements and Art Briles and the offensive staff are going to look. So, like, if we're in these certain situations here because they move so fast, number one, if they are going to move so fast down the field, would they have enough time to get the shuttle between Laquan and Blake coming in for each other at left guard? Although would that tip off to other teams? Okay, if they shift guards, or yeah. Baylor's going to do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of. I mean, we'll let the season play that whole thing out. But that's kind of the cat and mouse game that could come with this too.
Sure. I mean, you can use that to your advantage as well. Put out McGowan. Exactly. You think there's going to run, and you start.
Yeah. It. Absolutely. You can do. There's so much. That's going to be the beauty of maybe watching this part of the season, is how this could all venture out. I just think from that standpoint that Baylor might be in a position where two options are better than one, and there's not a drop-off if you go from Laquan to Blake, because each does different things well that will help your offense, maybe in particular parts of the field, particular way that you are going to run particular plays, things of that nature.
I think that one of the things that I keep thinking would be really fun, because I got to watch it some with Seastrunk and Richardson, is that, you know, Linwood is, like, he's listed at 5'9". I think he's maybe 5'8". Imagine, you know how easy it is to lose Linwood behind McGowan? I mean, that's just, you know, and that was one of the things that Shock said, it's part of his game of, you know, he said, I run low, I stay low, and, you know, and so he gets behind, you get behind a guy like that, he's going to be pretty easy to lose. I think Muir, but one of the things is that so many of the defensive lines are so athletic now, Muir's a little bit protected because he's got that tackle on one side and the center on the other, but you're still going to have some stuff where there's going to be guys trying to hit angles on him, and can he react quick enough to those angles, I think, are going to be the question with him.
Yeah. Another position I had to talk about was nickelback, but after the first couple days of practice, I don't think it's really being contested anymore. It sounds like Colin Brents has really won this job, and when you look at the depth chart behind him, it's an inexperienced sophomore in Patrick Levels and perhaps Trayvon Blanchard, the redshirt freshman from West Orange Stark. So I don't know. I don't think we need to give much time to nickelback. I feel like Brents is the guy.
We gave Brents a scholarship, I think, today.
Exactly. And he's no longer a walk-on starter. He's a former walk-on starter, and the coaches praise him. You know, coaches at Baylor are typically very positive about their players. They're not like Bob Stoops, where they're going to, you know, maybe rip on a guy. So, you know, of course, they're saying things you want to hear, but we'll find out about him come August 31st. So I think we should skip nickelback and go to corner.
Okay.
I think that's a wide-open position, despite, you know, the fact that there are starters named. I think you could see four or five different guys starting there.
Although I will say this, and like I said, it is a good thing. It's a great thing, though, for Colin Brents that he was awarded an athletic scholarship. It's a great to him, and it's a tribute to his work ethic. And couldn't be happier for him that that worked out like it did.
Yeah, completely agree. I mean, walk-ons go through a lot tougher football life than scholarship guys, because at the end of the day, they're paying the bills. So, I think it's a tribute to how hard he's worked that he's not only getting a scholarship, but he's starting for the defending Big 12 championship. I mean, that's credit to him. But now that we got that tribute out of the way, let's go back to cornerback. I guess right now Terrence Singleton and Xavier Howard are listed as the starters. I think opening day, that's who we're going to see, and I think they're probably the two best. And, you know, something that had maybe worried me about this position, the fact that you have young guys relatively inexperienced starting for the first time, it had concerned me. And then I can't remember where I read it, or I think it was maybe a Baylor football player who said it, but he said, you know, we're not worried about our cornerbacks. These guys are incredibly athletic. And, you know, it's true. I think Baylor got good play out of some guys who overachieved last year between K.J. Morton, Joe Williams, and then a bonus from Demetri Goodson. That was a pretty odd, you know, cornerback rotation. Two JUCO cornerbacks who were both two-star guys. Basically, they got two stars because they signed with Baylor, but they weren't really evaluated and weren't widely recruited at all. And Demetri Goodson, the basketball transfer and switch to cornerback. So, you know, I'm starting to change my outlook that maybe this position might not be so bad off after all.
Well, one of the things that Bennett said in his interview, and he's mentioned this a couple of times, is that he said, you know, KJ and Joe came in, and he said they hit the campus on Tuesday, and they do like 90 snaps on Saturday. And he said, these guys, we've been through spring with them.
Yeah.
We're going through a fall with them. So it's not going to be like it was when KJ and Joe walked out there. When you talked about guys playing above, I get, you know, Kevin's got a man crush on Mike Gundy. I kind of had one on KJ Morton. Number one, because he photographed great, you know, with that hair flying. But if you looked at his measurables and looked what he did on the field, he did way more on the field than his measurables said he should have been able to do.
Yeah, he's proof of how much heart matters and determination. He made the most of what he had, for sure. But that's kind of my point. I feel like those guys, aside from Goodson I feel like was a supremely athletic guy, but I thought Morton and Williams were, they're not your prototypical Big 12 corners, whereas I think Singleton and Howard are closer, and Chris Sanders especially, if he can get healthy. You know, remember, he played as a true freshman at Georgia, was going to be a big factor for their team until he, you know, had some issues and had to go to the JUCO route. So, I'm doing a 180. Now, the proof will be when they hit the field, but I feel like these are more athletic guys and better football players Baylor's bringing in. They just don't have that experience, and that's why we're a little leery about, you know, hyping them up.
Yeah. Okay, one of the ones that you didn't have, we talked about backups at wide receiver. I think we've already talked about that.
Yeah, we have.
But the Will linebacker, that's the one that, you know, when they asked Phil Bennett, what are you looking for in a Will linebacker, and he said Eddie Lackey. The other thing that he said was that, you know, they have Avion Edwards, you know, on the post-spring, but Bennett said that he thinks Taylor Young's going to be tough to keep off the field after reviewing the spring tape. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I Young, according to last year's roster and this year's roster, he has grown 1 inch. So maybe that inch has put him over the top. he was listed as 5'9 in 2013, and as of the current roster, he's 5'10. So now, all joking aside, this guy was, if he was 6'1", he might have been a five-star recruit based on the fact that he played at DeSoto, which is one of the top 5-10 teams at the upper levels of Texas high school football. And two, I mean, he was All-State. I think he was the Defensive Player of the Year his senior year. basically if a guy's in sight, he's going to tackle him. So he's got that natural ability. He's just one of those guys who's undersized and has to fight that off, that stigma of being small. And so it doesn't surprise me at all that he's working his way up, because he's just a natural football player, and he's just got to, he's got to basically earn that spot. You had something, Kevin?
Well, I was just going to say, with Young, you remember he was one of the late additions to the 2013 class, and the interesting thing about him is that, size was never an issue for him. I can remember, I've talked to Claude Mathis, the head coach of DeSoto, for umpteen years, as long as I've been doing this, and I think Claude was always frustrated about Taylor's recruitment simply because of his size.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of those things where, if Baylor was looking for someone to be that kind of guy who was unheralded, who wanted to play with the chip on their shoulder, I think Taylor's that kind of guy. And Taylor had a great spring. He was really pushing. And I'm one of those guys that really has a great feel, who really has high hopes for Avion Edwards, because he's got the quintessential size to play linebacker. Heck, that's why they brought him. That's why they converted him from running back to linebacker when they signed him out of Stephenville, because they envisioned him playing that type of position. But if he is struggling to pick up all the concepts and the requirements that is needed to play it, and if Taylor's picking up on it, then I don't know if you're going to have a change in the starters. You could, but if you are, but I think what you would see is you would see Taylor getting a lot more playing time on there. And, with defenses in today's college football like they are, with certain packages used for certain parts of the game or certain downs and distances, where the ball is on the field, that sort of thing, it really is to Young's benefit to have a good fall camp, to stay in the coach's mindset, and to be as productive as possible, because even if he's not starting, they're still going to probably use him extensively.
Yeah, and thinking about Phil Bennett specifically, I mean, he was known for having undersized guys at Kansas State. He's not immune to playing guys that don't fit the mold. So that's right. Something I think that works in Young's favor, is that he has a coach who, is not going to hold a guy back because of his size. If he's going to make plays, if he thinks he can make plays, then he'll play him even if he's doesn't fit that prototype.
Yeah, and it may be the position change, but, that position was there for the taking after Hager went down and they tried moving Eddie around a little bit. That position was there for the taking, and Edwards wasn't able to nail it down. Now, maybe he just needed a little more time, but right now, my call on that position is it's totally up for grabs, and I think it's there for whoever can grab it. Jake?
I completely agree, Stephen. That's something I wrote about during the season. I thought it was a pretty clear indictment. Maybe that's harsh, but I thought it was an indictment of Edwards and Kendall Ehrlich, that when Bryce Hager was out, they flip-flopped guys all around. They moved Ahmad Dixon to nickelback. They've moved Sam Hall at linebacker. They did everything but play Edwards and Kendall Ehrlich. And so I thought, those guys obviously don't have the trust of the coaches yet. Now, a lot has happened. We've had spring football since then, and then now we're in, fall camp, so maybe things have changed. But I thought it was a statement about those two players. Both were redshirt freshmen last year, that they weren't ready yet.
Okay. When we come back, we're going to make a quick run around the Big 12 as to some of the news, and news at Baylor looks really good compared to what some of the other teams are dealing with.
Sure do.
We'll catch you on the flip side.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SickhamSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports is Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
And while we were on break, Kevin picked up a little bit of information about Devontae Fields. Can you fill us in?
Yes, sir. Well, obviously, he was the talented defensive end out of Arlington who was a Big 12 Freshman of the Year 2 years ago. missed most of the 2013 season with a foot injury, got into numerous off-the-field incidents, was arrested basically the day after TCU had its presser at Big 12 Media Days for an incident involving his girlfriend, and he turned himself into police a few days afterwards, and then TCU subsequently after this whole mess separated him from the program. We've since seen on social media that Devontae Fields, who was going to be leaving the program or was no longer be a part of a TCU, was going to be part of TCU's program, courtesy of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram on Tuesday, has now told the Star-Telegram on Wednesday night that he plans on transferring to Stephen F. Austin down in Nacogdoches. So I don't think it's a big surprise. The TCU spin on this will be, well, we went through basically all of the 2013 season without Devontae Fields, so there's really not going to be much of a difference, which I can see. It's a huge disappointment. It's been a big waste of a great talent because of a kid like Fields who really his freshman year, just in watching him that year, you could really see it bubbling to the point where he had NFL first-round status all over him, and he still might. But the thing is that obviously there were too many issues with him off the field so that this was starting to strain on him and, more importantly, the TCU athletic department as a whole, the football program, which is trying to get its season underway. And sometimes in this case, Jake and Steven, less is more, and that's why Devontae Fields is apparently leaving Fort Worth and going over to East Texas.
Yeah, and you said TCU spin, and I kind of agree with that. And I don't know if it's spin, though. It's basically the truth. They did play last year without him, and there won't be
a record.
You know, there won't be. It's the truth. But by saying that, you're also just, you know, leaving out the fact that, well, you're not going to get, you know, 15 to 20 sacks now from one of your starting defensive ends. So it won't be different, but that's a bad thing because he is a difference maker. Like you said, his freshman year, I mean, he looked like a third or fourth year college player. He was just outstanding. And so, yeah, it won't be different, and that's a bad thing because they were supposed to have him back. And obviously a guy who can miss an entire season and still get preseason Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year is a special player, and TCU's going to be missing that. And, you know, I liken it, say, if, you know, Troy Baker, say he hadn't played at all last year for Baylor, you know, yeah, you play last year without him, and maybe if you lose him, you say, well, we're used to that, but you'd much rather have that guy back than have to do the same thing you did the year before. So I think it's a big loss, especially for a team that it's really struggling to find itself in the new conference. Funny is probably not the right word from TCU's standpoint, but things just keep going wrong for them, and it's really hard to believe, you know, to watch that not only are they losing on the field, they're losing off of it too, and it's TCU fans must just be wondering, you know, how the hell did this happen to them.
Well, you not only go with Devontae Fields, but you look at two of the more talented wide receivers they brought in when that class, I think 2011, with Ladarius Brown out of Waxahachie, a kid that Baylor really wanted to try and pry away from TCU and do it, and he's no longer at TCU because of off-the-field issues with him. And then you've got Brendan Carter, who's from Euless Trinity, who switched from Oklahoma to TCU right before signing day, and been pretty much a bust. And I think, you know, if you want to say one play where Brandon Carter's career never really captured the ideology, I go back to watching TCU play SMU in an overtime game at Amon Carter, where he's wide open in the end zone to catch a game-time two-point conversion that would have kept the game going, and he dropped it. And it's just like from that, it's just been going nonstop ever since for him, to off-the-field issues to where he leaves the program as talented as he – I mean, I saw him play several times during that 2012 season, his sophomore year, where he was making great catches, but the inconsistency and then the off-the-field stuff. And, you know, I think this is part of where TCU's recruiting is going to be now, is because their recruiting has changed, guys, to the point where they have got – where they are – they could, going up against Texas and Oklahoma State and Baylor and Oklahoma for the same types of kids is a completely different animal now than what it was when they were in Conference USA and when they were in the Mountain West, where they could get those kids and they could get them all coached up and ready to go because they could play those teams in the non-conference game, that big non-conference game, one shot, or like the Rose Bowl against Wisconsin, something like that. And then during their conference season, they were playing maybe one or two really great teams in the Mountain West, like a Utah. Then they'd have 2 weeks in between playing like a Colorado State and Wyoming before they get to Utah, or I mean, excuse me, BYU. And now in this league, it's rough, it's tough out there, folks. You got to grind week after week. Nothing, no disrespect to Iowa State, West Virginia, and Kansas, but not because good teams have lost on the road at those places too. Look at Oklahoma State last year at West Virginia. But you, when you got to go back to back to back in with OU and Texas, Baylor, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, that's a rough road to hoe every week.
Yeah, it's the schedule is, you know, there are a lot of people defensive about it, but the schedule has definitely magnified these losses they've had. I think the 2010 TCU team could have won any conference that year. They were probably that good with Andy Dalton at quarterback. Whereas I think the other ones were just really good football teams, but they did have the benefit of not playing a Big 12 schedule or a Pac-12 schedule, whatever you have you. I mean, they just didn't play the same strength of schedule, and that's indisputable. Now they are, and it's really these losses have come at the worst possible time from TCU's vantage point. But enough about the Frogs. You know, we'll talk about them more in the preseason, obviously, before Baylor plays them. What about another Texas rival? I know.
Well, one of the things that I'm thinking is, if I was a head coach, I would hate the off season. You know, it's because you got to be sitting by the phone going, what next? But you know, we've got the
It happened with Robbie Rhodes.
Robbie Rhodes, and you know, that was pretty light duty to what some of the stuff that happened a few weeks ago with the Texas players.
Right.
And then who is it that's trying to get transferred into Oklahoma right now? Jake, you've been
Doriel Green
Beckham. Yeah.
Outstanding 5-star receiver. I'm sure most people know the backstory. Missouri was great at Missouri, but another guy who just once he got off the field, he didn't quite know how to behave. So the story is he transferred to Oklahoma, and of course he's been a perfect citizen since he's gotten to Norman, so the reports say. That's great. I hope the guy turns it around. He's a great talent. What bothers me is the fact that Oklahoma has some hope that he's going to be eligible this season after getting kicked off of the Missouri team after the 2013 season. The NCAA, there's no reason to have any faith or hope in the NCAA. They've proven out time again that they're pretty incompetent a lot of times when it comes to these transfers. But this would be just egregiously bad if they rule him immediately eligible. He was kicked off the team. This is not a hardship waiver. He's not transferring to Oklahoma to be closer. He's transferring to Oklahoma because he had no other choice but to transfer to another school. And I look at Sean Oakman. I find this parallel. Sean Oakman kicked off of Penn State, transferred to Baylor, and he wasn't eligible. Now, the asterisk with Sean Oakman was that they were granting every Penn State transfer that year immediate eligibility because it was in the wake of the Sandusky, catastrophe or all that news. And, Oakman probably could have fallen under that umbrella, but the NCAA ruled that since he transferred before that, he wasn't eligible. So if they're going to rule against Oakman, there is just no possible way, if they can live with themselves, that they can rule DGB eligible. I think it would just be a travesty.
I think the only thing from what it sounds like they are going to try is that runoff rule where a kid has been dismissed for the program for whatever reason to see if they can kind of find a way to, maybe use the loophole to try and get him in. You're right, Jake. That it would be an absolute shocker. Well, I guess maybe in today's climate, it would not be a shocker if DGB is ruled eligible to compete in 2014 based on everything that happened off campus or during the offseason at Missouri. But then Oklahoma's got another issue with their talented running back, Joe Mixon, who was involved in a fight with a female right after his 18th birthday, the week of the Big 12 Media Days. I think that happened on Thursday night, what was it, the 24th of July.
Yeah.
And right now he's not going through any team workouts because OU and the Norman Police Department are still investigating it. And then on top of that, then you've got all the Texas issues with players being run off and suspended. Josh Turner, their safety, apparently has been reinstated, but guys like Jalen Overstreet, Kendall Sanders, gone. And it was and Charlie Strong, the Texas coach, spoke to that on Sunday before Texas got the season started about following the code. And, you know, sometimes you just got to clean house. It's really going to impact Texas's depth. But sometimes you've got to cut off your nose to spite your face in order to get to where you want to go with your program.
Yeah, it didn't hurt them enough that they're not a top 25 team, though. So
right. Well, and that's probably just reputation and respect for Charlie too. I mean, that's Texas's
reputation.
That's
not probably.
I mean, we can talk about all the concerns that we have with Texas. I mean, then they get news that Jackson Shipley, their talented wide receiver, has a hamstring issue, so he's going to miss a little time. I guess we'll find out if he's going to be ready for the opener. But still, this has just been a rough couple of weeks with the Big 12 with players either getting hurt or getting kicked off the team or transferring or whatever the case may be. And, of course, we should follow up, too, you know, with Robbie Rhodes, that he's since transferred to Bowling Green, and it looks like he's probably going to redshirt there. He did go through practices on Monday, which was Tuesday, which was Bowling Green's first day to practice. So it's just a lot of player movement. And, Steven, you're right. Coaches hate the offseason. I think that's why it's nicknamed knucklehead season sometimes.
Yeah, one of the things on the Jackson Shipley injury, it's a hamstring. They say he's going to miss time. They don't know how long he's been out. But if you take a look, David Ash, you know, he goes out from the Brigham Young game last year. Then he comes back, he hurts his ankle in spring ball, doesn't get to finish that. Now Shipley's out. Shipley was supposed to move in as their number one receiver.
Right.
This guy is a possession receiver. He's not really a speed guy. I mean, he's got okay speed, but he's not that fast. But when are he and Ash going to be able to get on the same page? Because they haven't been on the same field since last October.
Great line, yeah.
Steven, you're full of good points tonight, like Kevin. I don't know y'all like had some coffee before, you got your minds going, but I that's a great point. You know, Ash hasn't been around in a while, and now he's not going to have a chance to rejuvenate that connection with Shipley. And hamstring injury is the kind of injury that can be lingering too. You can re-aggravate it. So that's not a position that Texas had a whole lot of room to work with. So that definitely hurts.
Okay, Kevin, you had just pulled up some comments on Bill Snyder, and Snyder's not really known for being a controversial guy.
Yeah.
But he threw a couple of firebombs out during a talk today. Can you kind of synopsis?
Yeah, Kansas State's getting ready for the season, and Snyder, he's pretty old school. You know, Bill's going to be 75 in October, I think, and he just kind of talked about the fact that. He feels like a lot of universities, especially those in the Big Five schools, have quote-unquote sold out in search of the almighty dollar. I'm going to quote a story in the AP story up from me. He goes, it's changed. I mean, college athletics, football in particular, has changed dramatically over the years, Snyder said. I think we've sold out. We're all about dollars and cents. The concept of college football no longer has any bearing on the quality of the person, the quality of students. Universities are selling themselves out. And again, this happens one day before the NCAA Board of Directors is about to vote on a proposal in which the five power conferences, like the Big 12, the ACC, the SEC, the Pac-12, and the Big 10, are going to be basically have the autonomy to make their own rules and pass legislation without the approval of the rest of the Division I's body, like the AAC, the Sun Belt, the Mountain West schools, that sort of thing, that they can kind of run off and cut and do their own thing. You know, I would love to agree with Bill Snyder. I do agree with Bill Snyder. The only problem is, for all of us, that the genie's out of the bottle. It's not, you can't put it back in. It's kind of like you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. This is where we're at. Money's controlling everything in college athletics. It's turned into a business, and that's why we're talking about stipends for players, why Northwestern's players early this year organized vote for to try and form a union, things like that, just because that's the way college athletics is going. I don't like where it's going. I think we are absolutely making a mockery of the term amateur, but at the same time, with so much money involved in college athletics today, staggering amounts in the billions of dollars, what are you going to do? There's no way that anyone's going to turn that down if it's going to advance your school or your conference for a better way of life.
Yeah, I'm with you. I agree with what he said. It's just way too late. And you notice it's a guy who's probably on his way out of the game, you know, in the next however many years, but he's definitely in the twilight of his career at this time for sure. Right. Not guys like Nick Saban or even Art Briles saying it. Guys who you know have a little more future and are benefiting greatly from the fact that TV controls this, because you look at those salaries. I'm sure there's not too many complaints that all the money that TV is created for it, because they're benefiting from it, and so are the fans. You know, we're getting new stadiums, we're getting 45 games on TV every weekend. So it's I feel like he's I like what he says, but it's at this point is almost, I don't know, not worth saying it, because really nothing's going to change unless...
So much after the fact.
Yeah, it is. It's just something would have to change radically in college football for things to be different than what he's saying, and that's just not going
to
happen.
You have to have, I think, conferences or major Division I programs, like a signature program, declare bankruptcy, really, for anything to kind of set the precedent for college football in order to start moving in a different direction. Is that going to happen in all three of our lifetimes? I would sincerely doubt it. Now, athletic departments in general always run in the red, with the exception of maybe a handful, like at Texas and Alabama or Ohio State. You know, Baylor's obviously, but these budgets have increased to the point where, like, Baylor's budget, what is it, increased like tenfold in the last 5 years or something like that, something astronomical. And they just received a $23 million check from the Big 12 because of their TV partnerships, you know. But well before Art even showed up, if you want to go back to the Guy Morris era, if Baylor is getting $3 million from a television contract from the Big 12 during the Guy Morris year, that's great. But when you're getting now, what, I can't even do the math now, but, you know, eight times as much, it really just changes the perspective on how you do things and how you do business around your school. And that's why you've got, like you said, Jake, a $260 million stadium about to open up on your campus Labor Day weekend.
Well, and, you know, the other thing about it, and it was what I was, when I was talking to the lawyer for the Big 12 up there at the Big 12 Media Days, one of the points he made is football, for some reason, I don't know why, success in baseball, any other sport doesn't really do it, basketball to some extent, but football drives all your donations, not just what you sell, but donations to the school. Baylor's getting ready to have the biggest freshman class they've ever had, and Dr. McCall was saying, we didn't intend to have the biggest freshman class we ever had, we just got so many qualified applicants that we did not feel we could turn away. You know, and so every time you get a school getting outrageously successful on the football field, the freshman class gets bigger, the donations go up, it drives everything else in the school.
You know, Troy Baker said Baylor probably wouldn't recruit him if he were a high school player right now. Well, I went to Baylor as a freshman in 97. You know, I probably wouldn't qualify for Baylor these days. They wouldn't have let a they wouldn't have recruited me back then. So you're right. I mean, just football, it's just you get that exposure, and it means so much in American culture how good your football team is at the collegiate level. It's kind of sad sometimes that you have more pride in your football team than you do in your field of study, but that's just kind of how it is. And
well, it's just like they say about college athletics, that it is the front porch of your university, because that's how most people will identify with you.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll just kind of I would like to think that in that respect, it's just money is such money can just make people do a lot of crazy things, as we've all learned the history of. Not to get so philosophical about it, but it does create so many different types of personalities and things like that that it just changes everything. Not for the good in a lot of ways, but at the same time, like the science says, that's just the way it is. And unfortunately, this is the reality that we're living in, and we all just kind of have to make the best of it. What I really hope here is that we don't get to a point where college athletics is to the point where it's becoming so distance itself from the fans that it makes it so problematic that they can't even do it. So we probably should wrap this thing up, guys.
Yeah, I think so. Sorry, Stephen.
Oh, I want to throw one point in on there. One of the things where I think that college athletics, you are already starting to see it distance itself. I am old enough to remember the old Southwest Conference. Lived in the same dorm with Earl Campbell, so that gives you an idea of my age. But in the days of the Southwest Conference, you know, you could drive to SMU, you could drive to Tech, you could drive to TCU, you could drive to Austin, you could drive to Houston. Arkansas was the longest trip for anybody. And, you know, you don't see that anymore. And you're starting to see more and more with the networks, they're looking at the fans as more of a studio audience than actually fans. And I think, you know, you're going to start seeing that happen. I think you're going to start seeing some separation when it's becoming a studio presentation instead of an event. You know, you can't road trip to West Virginia.
Well, and that's how pro sports are. I mean, it's a TV game, especially the NFL, and that's what the college sports are becoming with all the money. I mean, it's basically professional sports with the athletes not getting paid. So, it doesn't surprise me, Stephen, that that's the way it's moving. Well, should we wrap this up, guys?
Let's wrap her up.
All right, well.
All right, we'll come back with a Khalil Houghton update when we have it, and we'll see you next week on the Sikkim Sportscast.
The Sikkim Sportscast is an independent opinion and analysis-driven program from the staff and does not represent the views or opinions of either Rivals or Yahoo. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.